Hey there, Mike Dunn, Editor-in-Chief of Tabletop, and I've got something very special to tell you about. It's a new crowdfunding campaign from GUIcube. It's called The Tomb of Gygax. It's a tribute to Gary Gygax and many of the legends that created the wonderful game that we all love to play. The link is right down here. Go hit it up, back it, you can't go wrong. Woo!
We have games to talk about this week. Look at us.
What's that?
What are video games? What are they?
I thought we just talked about businesses.
Yeah, I didn't know. I thought video games were just business. I didn't know there was an actual product to talk about. We got something.
I don't even like video games.
That's what Noah thought. Ready to leave over it.
He's like, I'm so over this. Shout outs to Noah. He is not able to be with us again because he is sick again. So hopefully he feels better very, very soon. So, we'll talk more Final Fantasy because apparently, Jack, you are playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. How are you feeling about it so far?
I'm feeling all right about it. I mean, so I like Final Fantasy VII a lot. It's probably like the first like RPG that I played, really. I mean, I probably played Pokemon first because I could play that before I could read, but. But I played Final Fantasy VII after I could read, and that was the first like RPG I like really got into that way. And so a lot of fond memories of it. I mean, it's a pretty legendary game. I mean, everyone knows the gist of it, even if they haven't played it. And so I played the remake, and I thought it was pretty good for the most part. There's parts of it I didn't like, and I think. And as parts of it I do like, and I think both of them carry over to Rebirth pretty one-to-one. The first 2 hours of Rebirth were kind of difficult for me. first it opens with Zack, and I just don't want to talk about Zack at all, so we'll skip over that.
Too close of a name to you? Yeah, that's what it is.
Well, you know what? You know, I have this thing where everyone, you know, it shows up in court documents that people talk to me like this. They call me Zach because they transposed a Z and the J.
Because I've almost, I'll be honest, I've almost done that myself a few times.
No, it happens at doctor's appointments. It happens at legal documents. It happens all the time.
that is fascinating. Maybe there's some like subliminal like thing with your name where it like messes with their brain and you just think
people just want to call me Zach. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's because you're so cool.
Oh, is that? Well, because I don't think Zach's cool.
And Jack is not.
Zach
is a Zach is a Chad name. So it's like, he's probably cool. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Final Fantasy Zach is not cool. Well, I guess that's not quite accurate. I think what they've done with him is not cool.
That's fair. He's supposed.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be.
Did you play Crisis Core?
I sure did when it came out on PSP.
And I'm guessing you did not decide to go back on PS4, PS5.
No, I had my fill. I played all of the extended Final Fantasy VII universe. I was not the phone games, but like Crisis Core, Dirge of Cerberus, and the Advent Children movie. I've exposed myself to all of that. not a huge fan of any of it, really. And so, like,
Advent Children?
No, I don't.
Oh my god. Jack?
There's a lot of problems with that movie.
Seriously? I'm just calling you Zach now, just to troll you for that.
Okay.
We'll have to talk about your qualms with Advent Children later.
Do you really like it?
It's good. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like the best movie ever, but like it's good. It's fun. It's entertaining.
Okay.
I won't call it like a cinematic masterpiece.
So, like, are you like a do you? Are you a fan of Final Fantasy VII, or is it just kind of like a spectacle thing, right? Like,
it's funny. I've never finished Final Fantasy VII. Yeah. So my history with Final Fantasy VII, I'd never owned a PlayStation 4 forever until the PlayStation 4. So it wasn't until it came out on PC that I started to play it, and just time, I haven't been able to finish it. But I knew everything about Final Fantasy VII well during the time it came out. You know, it was just one of those games. So I loved the soundtrack. You know, I loved everything about what Final Fantasy VII was doing, from what I was hearing from people, from what I had seen. So it was one of those. It's like, I haven't played it, but I feel like I've played it. But at this point, I have played it. I just haven't finished it.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways, I mean,
I like it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those. Yeah, we're into the Advent Children review now, actually. I mean, it's just brief. It's just like one of those things where I don't think it captured anything I liked about Final Fantasy VII in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So I, you know, as all this extended universe stuff is just kind of something I have to compartmentalize, and like, I'm used to that. Like, you know, Spider-Man, I'm a big Spider-Man fan. I read the comics. You have to compartmentalize certain storylines away from like the Spider-Man you actually like.
Sure, yeah.
And so I'm familiar with that. And so when I played Remake, I thought it was actually a pretty pleasant surprise, where I thought, hey, this is like, this actually feels like Final Fantasy VII, and it's good for the most part. And there's things I like about it. And so I was happy with that. And then I feel like, though, the problem with like Crisis Core, the problem with Dirge of Cerberus, is it kind of ruins the mystique of a lot of things that are in that original game. Like, I don't need to know more about Zack. I don't need to know every little thing. I don't know how he's like a huge dork that is just embarrassing whenever he opens his mouth. And, like,
hey, I'm the dork with
yeah, you're a Zack fan.
No, I'm not a Zack fan. I'm just saying I am Zack.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's just something where I didn't feel like I needed that. What Crisis Core added to the story, I didn't feel like it was needed. And so whenever I see Zack in this remake rebirth stuff, it's like, oh, cringe. It's more Zack. But so that was my first impression, because it opens right on Zack, and it's like, oh, here we go. but it's only like 5 minutes, and then you move into the real game, which is, it starts with the flashback. David's talked about it a million times on the podcast, where Cloud has a flashback to his past with Sephiroth, and they hang out and they're buddies. And it's kind of like the worst parts of the remake, this like initial sequence, where it's like, this is it's an important sequence, so I get why they put so much focus on it, because it's pretty integral to the plot and all of that. But it's like a 15-20 minute sequence in the original game, and you're not, you know, it's basically expositing story onto you for the most part. And in the Rebirth version, this is like a 2-hour long epic, where you're like going through cutscenes, then you go through dungeons, and then you're like doing like combat stuff, and it like kind of goes on and on. And some of it's fine. Some of it's fine where like, because you're going through Cloud's like hometown, and I kind of like how they expanded that a little bit, where you're like talking to people and you're getting a bit better view of it, because it goes over pretty quick in the original. And so I think like getting that extra time is good. But like once they like start going into the gameplay part of it, it's kind of like, this is not like a good way to extend things, which is something I felt a lot in the remake too, is that, you know, you're kind of just going up different like hills and floors, and they're like, you know, the part about the flashback for Cloud at Nibelheim that's important is like, oh yeah, you're seeing how powerful Sephiroth is and all this crazy stuff he did and how evil he is. I never thought that I would like play a new version of it like 20 years later, where you're like taking the world's smallest giant vacuum and pushing around slowly to like suck up Mako fumes to open an elevator door. I mean, the whole setup doesn't really make any sense, but it's like almost there purely to waste your time, because there's no puzzle here. It's like, we got to slow the player down. So here's this vacuum. You got to like drag it around slowly to like suck up some fumes. And then that's like the puzzle, I guess. Like, you just, it's not a puzzle. You're just doing busy work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's fine. That's it is what it is. It's not like there's that many sections, but it's enough where it's like, wow, this is kind of brutal. And
that's how I felt about The Last of Us and like the little garbage things. It's like, how many of these am I gonna have to push just to climb into a window? Like, this is so boring. Like, what are we doing?
There's just a lot of little stuff where like you don't think too much of it in the moment, but like it's accumulative stuff. Like, you know, you suck up these fumes to open an elevator door, then you go into the elevator and you press a button, and it's like all drawn out and is like with detailed animations, all this stuff. And it's like,
it's super, I mean, this is kind of,
well, it's just like wasting time. You know? It's like you're adding, with all the waiting around animations and stuff you do, I mean, it's probably adds several hours to the game time, just like looking for all this stuff. And I mean, that's just how AAA games are these days. So I guess it is what it is, but that was one of those things where, okay, well, I'm not super impressed with this beginning part. Then you get to the boss battle. The boss battle is pretty cool. I mean, they do cool animations with Cloud and Sephiroth where they're like dancing around. I screwed up. Like, so there's this second phase to the boss where he jumps on these canisters and like starts like shooting stuff at you. And you're supposed to like do that super epic team up attack with Cloud and Sephiroth. I didn't like realize that you're supposed to do that like right away. And so when I hit the button to do the synchronized attack, it was like a second too late. So the boss jumped off the canister where you're supposed to hit him, and Cloud and Sephiroth just like jump up there anyway and like hit nothing. And you're just seeing this animation play out where they're not doing anything. And it was like, it's kind of ruined the cool moment. But overall, it's fine. And so after that, you know, then you actually get to start the game proper where, if, you know, you go out to the open world, and that's basically where the real game is. And so I'm about 6 hours into the game. And so, you know, 2 hours has been that initial part, and 4 hours has basically been me like messing around doing side quests. So exploring the open world, you know, doing the Ubisoft tower thing where you press the button in the tower. And I mean, I think a lot of the side stuff is kind of fun. Like, I like how they're kind of varying it where there's different little quests. Like, there's like a tree you go into and there's like Moogles in it. They're all weird looking in this game for some reason. Like, they're like really deformed. Like, you know, you're used to like Moogles and they're kind of like cute looking, like little furry guys. And these guys in Rebirth just look like strange. Like, they're like, they got something wrong with them. Yeah. But then they want to like play tag or something with you. We gotta like herd them into a thing or else they like shoot you with lasers. That was, you know, that's, it kind of reminded me of like a Kingdom Hearts mini game or something like that. And so that was kind of fun.
That's a good bring up. It's like a Kingdom Hearts mini game. It really is.
Yeah. It's like straight out of the Winnie Pooh world or something like that.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's like a side quest where you have to like get like a machine part or something for your weird cyborg friend who like runs the Ubisoft towers. And so
runs the Ubisoft towers.
And that was kind of fun.
They're not as annoying as like the Ubisoft.
No, they're not that bad. And it's actually kind of weird because like I'm so used to those like uncovering parts of the map, and they don't really do that. They just kind of show you where a few more things are. And so like whenever they zooms out to the map, it's like I'm kind of expecting everything to like clear out, like, you know, like a Spider-Man or an Assassin's Creed, but it doesn't. It's just like here's two more markers. I'm like, oh, okay. But
yeah, I feel like most games aren't doing the whole fog of war thing anymore. I forget, yeah, there was a game I was just playing. I forget what the game it was, but yeah, it just revealed some more icons. I was like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, so, and then I did like one of those quests where you get like this part and it has a callback to the remake version where, oh, there's these loser guys you beat up and now you gotta beat them up again. And
yep.
So there's, I like how they, I mean, technically it's all like fetch quest stuff, but they try to spice it up with like different like storylines and stuff to make it feel like it's a real part of the game.
There's a lot of fun to find in it. That's yeah, the biggest thing that I've found. Like, and then the other things that you were talking about, the world intel stuff, like it's there to be there, it feels like, but at the same point, it's not a chore. Yeah. So it's like, okay, that's, I don't care that this is in here. It gives me a little bit of XP. It's worth the 2 seconds I spent hitting a couple of buttons.
Yeah. I mean, my personality, the way I handle these games is like, well, I got to clear out all the side stuff before I move on to the main thing. So I'm going to be spending a lot of time doing this stuff. And so I don't know if it's going to like carry me the whole way through, but I'll do it.
That's the worst thing about reviewing a game like that is there's so many worlds that I just immediately had to stop.
And yeah.
I was like, I really want to do the side stuff.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of, at least the impression I get, that's kind of the appeal of this game is that there's so much side stuff, you know, like
yep.
there's the Queen's Blood game, and I'm liking that so far. I like how it's pretty simple and straightforward. I hated the Condor Fortress game that they introduced in the DLC.
I will tell you that is part of the Junon region.
Okay, yeah. Well,
it's a lot more limited compared to Queen's Blood, though.
Yeah, well, I'll give it another shot, but it's like one of those things that totally turned me off, the Yuffie DLC. Because like there's a certain point in the Yuffie DLC where it's like, here's 10 side quests, you gotta do them all, and like half of them involve this mini game that you hate playing. But Queen's Blood, I don't really feel that bad playing it. It's you know, it's pretty straightforward. I think it's pretty fun. And if you mess up, you can just hit the restart button and it's over. You can just restart and do like a minute long match and it's easy. So it's pretty painless. Nice. I like that. Yeah. And because these card game, Final Fantasy has some pretty famous card games, but I've never really been into them that much. Like the Triple Triad's the famous one from Final Fantasy VIII. I don't really like Triple Triad. I didn't really like the one from Final Fantasy IX. But this one's okay, so I can deal with that. there's lots of fun stuff to do with the combats. I'm finding the combat kind of like harder than I remember the remake being, just in that you like actually have to like guard stuff now. Otherwise, like you'll just get mauled all the time. Like there's these wolves that I keep running into, and if you don't block their attack, they just like maul you, and you have to switch characters to save Cloud or something. And that happens to me like all the time, and I feel like that almost never happened in remake. And so like, I have to like actually pay attention and like do good at the game now. that's good. And so yeah, I'm enjoying it overall. And it's one of those games where a lot of it's like, oh yeah, this is okay. This part's bad. Oh, but Eris said something, and so I guess this is a great game now. that's actually one thing that's kind of stressing me out a little bit, is that they have all these relationship meteors that you see now, and like, you know, I know what's going to happen in this game. You're going to, you know, once you get to the Golden Saucer, just like the original game, you're going to take one of these people out on a date. And I want it to be the right person, right? And it's like, so you got to like balance all these relationship meters, and like, should I do the side quest? I guess I gotta do the side quest just because I gotta get all the side quests done. But like, you're like giving me Tifa points. I don't necessarily want Tifa points.
Tifa, I gotta side quest horribly.
I know you have the advantage here. I need Aerith.
Okay. Yeah, Tifa, we can be friends. That's fine. But
you have relegated Tifa to the friend zone. This is blasphemous.
You know, I'm having fun. I'm only 6 hours in, so it's not like I'm super far in, but I'm having fun so far. In general, it's one of those things, and I'm going to expose the podcast people to this too. I was exposing you guys to it earlier, but in general, this game and remake feel kind of weird to me, because the original game, you know, it's got those pixel blocky people, and that stuff's actually intentional. Like, they wanted to try to evoke the same style as like Final Fantasy 4, 5, 6, where they had those chibi characters. You had to kind of fill in the blanks of your imagination a little bit, like what Cloud actually was like, and you know what these people's personalities were, and like these remakes and these rebirth, like they try to fully realize that they're not realistic because they have like anime traits to their faces and stuff, but like, you know, they're trying to be more real. And so it reminds me of like going to Disneyland or something like that, where it's like, here's the characters and you're talking to them, but in the back of your head, this isn't really Cloud. This isn't really Barret. That's kind of what it feels like to me. it all works, but it's just kind of like a weird, uncanny feeling when I play these games sometimes, where this isn't quite lining up with the version that was in my head for so many years, but that's fine.
I guess I kind of had that feeling when I watched Advent Children, right? Because at the time, like, that was the most fully realized version of the Final Fantasy VII characters. And it was like, oh, frick, like, they're doing all this stuff. This is what they look like. Look at the muscles. Sephiroth and his freaking super long sword. This in action. This is crazy. I hadn't considered the idea of... And this is, how all young brains work, but when you play something like Pokemon, and it's like these super small little characters, and the Pokemon are coming out, and they look like whatever with the, you know, green and gray graphics and things like that, you know. Yeah. It's, and then you see the anime and then it's like, ooh, like that's. But in one sense, with that, it kind of created the images for me when I went back to play Pokemon on the Game Boy. So it was like, I'm seeing what's happening on screen, but I'm also like imagining what this looks like if it were like in anime yeah. form. And I think part of that was the turn-based, you don't really see a whole bunch of details. So you're kind of filling in the blanks, although some of it's informed by the anime.
Yep.
And in this, I think it's interesting you bring that up because there is nothing left of the imagination because it's all right there in front of you. But then again, I have a feeling, I don't think this is a secret actually, so I'm not going to say, like, this wasn't really made for like the Final Fantasy VII like veterans. They're included.
Well, yeah.
But they're trying to make Final Fantasy VII new for players who did not play it or feel like it's outdated because of the graphics and things like that. So that's kind of how video games are now. Like everything's trying to be hyper realistic, at least on the AAA level. Everything's trying to be hyper realistic. And you're right. There's not much left to the imagination to enjoy and fill in the blanks on that front. And I do wonder, in some respects, if that kind of, I want to say ruins video games in some way, but there's a certain joy when you go back and play a Nintendo game where there's still a level of imagination you can have while you play a game. Because like even Mario, as detailed as Mario is now, there's so much wonkiness and zaniness to it.
So pretty abstract, yeah.
Yeah, but even Breath of the Wild, where Link is like really like fully realized at this point, even beyond Ocarina of Time, which at that time, like that was Link at like, wow, like this is crazy. It's no longer top down and like fully 3D dungeons and whoa.
Yep.
There's still a level of like, there's still a level of imagination involved with something like Breath of the Wild.
I think that's the magic of like open worlds in general, is it kind of captures a little bit of the imagination, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think there's something to that. Where Final Fantasy VII is just so like, look, everything you knew, like this is what it looks like for real. Them chocobos, yeah, this is what they ugly, huh? Yeah, this is what they look like.
Like, well, that's the thing, right? Like when I saw Advent Children, I mean, it's just like, this is wrong. Cloud's not this depressed sad sack who's dying of like magic cancer or whatever.
But the weird thing about like Advent Children, I think timing has to do with it too, because even going back and like playing Final Fantasy VII after I had watched Advent Children and obviously before Remake came out, your imagination kind of goes differently with Final Fantasy VII with the polygons and stuff. It's like, this is cool, but like I have now, like what I was talking about with Pokemon in my head, like this is kind of what it looks like happening yeah. for real. And we got, so it still didn't lose its luster, but you're right. With Final Fantasy VII, like there's no room to think about what it could, because it's like, no, oh, this is their interpretation of everything that happened in Final Fantasy VII originally. Now it's just in your face.
Well, and there's like still weird stuff in this game though. Like, so like in Remake, a big thing is that you like rest on benches to like recover all your health and stuff. I mean, it's a pretty abstracted video game mechanic to like rest on a bench and get all your health back, but whatever. And they like made it like even weirder in this game where there's like chocobo stations you go to where you like fixed a sign and that lets you sleep on the bench. But you can't just sleep on the bench now. You have to have like a pillow that you like bring yourself, and that's what lets you get your health back. Like you need like pillow to be extra comfortable to get your health back for some reason, even though that was never a problem.
There are regular. Let's remember that there are regular benches in the game that are already comfortable. Like so,
right? But the ones aren't for some reason
with a pillow. But here it is. This bench is pre-made with a pillow.
Some
for
of
you.
Them
you
are just
kind of
busted,
own.
And you need a pillow.
Right. Well, the point is, it's a pretty abstract video game thing in this like fully realized world.
In all fairness, Final Fantasy VII is a very strange video game in whatever form it takes.
Well, and that's the thing though. It's like you can kind of believe in the original just because you have to use your imagination a lot more. And this is like, here's realistic Cloud, Aeris, and Tifa. And then they have to like wrestle with the Mako vacuum to vacuum up Mako. And
But I think there's a level of realism to Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth, according to your words. I haven't played it yet. I've only played the demo of Remake. That something like Yakuza doesn't have. You know, it's like Yakuza is so absurd that your imagination is still having fun, because it's like this wouldn't actually happen, you know.
Right.
But Final Fantasy VII is done in such a way where
it definitely would
like
happen. There would be a guy who would like be injected with alien cells and fight with you, you know. And
but like
there would be a
dog
that
like
talks
in the world, you know. Like there's a suspension of disbelief with Yakuza. Where it's like within what Final Fantasy VII is, the framework that's been set up within this world seems almost too realistic in that way.
I get what you're saying. I don't think that's as present in Rebirth. Maybe it's just dependent on the person, but like
sure.
For me, all the suspension of disbelief, like I had plenty of that playing this game. Like that just was there for me. Maybe it's the magic because I've been able to experience it a little bit fresher than most people. Or it could be just that's just something that I'm able to do a little bit easier than others.
Well, it depends. Like, it's not like something that bothers me. I guess I won't even necessarily say it bothers me. It's just something
I
notice.
It's just something you notice. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just think it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Cause like, I can't remember if I said this on the podcast or not, cause we were talking earlier, but like there's a part early on where you're in the van with Cloud and Sephiroth in the flashback, and he's like doing this like weird exercise motion that's straight from the PS1 game. And like no one actually exercises like this. You're like using this weird abstract thing they did on the Tiny Polygon guy, but you're having him like actually do it in real life, and it's like weird.
it's just a callback.
Yeah. And so it's like one of those things where you kind of have to like reconcile the fact that this is realistic, but also like trying to ape a PS1 game at the same time. I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah. It's Japan. They do some strange stuff.
And the game does stay pretty strange. Like there's plenty of, which, you know, if you played the first one, then like there's a lot of areas in this game where it's just going to be odd. But it's that Yakuza like you talked about. It's that Yakuza odd that you just, it's endearing as opposed to infuriating.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. All right. Another solid look at Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. All right, Jack.
Oh.
I've been waiting for this. I've been playing Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. I was looking forward to playing this. It is a Metroidvania. I do like Metroidvanias. And I liked what I saw of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown through previews and, you know, the Gaming Trend did some stuff as well. So I was like, yeah, okay, this, oh, the demo too. The demo sold me. Like, it was like, oh yeah. Oh, this combat feels really good. So I was definitely looking forward to it. And I didn't finish it, mostly because of time, but I also didn't want to finish it. So,
oh, no.
This is a very weird one for me because I haven't played a ton of Castlevania in my life. When it comes to Metroidvanias, Metroid is my like go-to style of Metroidvania. And that's like my standard. The Castlevanias that I've played, I feel flow better than what Prince of Persia The Lost Crown is doing. So one of my biggest problems with it, you mentioned this, Jack, is the backtracking, the way you have to do it within The Lost Crown. But I think our gripes are a bit different. So my problem with the backtracking in this game, it feels stilted at times where I'm fine with the platformer. I got to a point where it's like, okay, I see what Jack is talking about. Like the platforming can get a little intense, but that didn't really bother me that much. What bothered me was the instances where I had to engage in combat, and there were very few times where I could just run past. It happened more often near the three quarters of the way, but it didn't happen enough. And then where you have to run back, the sequences are really long. So the teleporters are spread out in such a way where it doesn't feel convenient. So I'm having to run through all this stuff, do some platforming. I just want to go. I don't want to have to deal with any enemies. I've dealt with you before. When I play Metroid, any of them, I think I could say any of them. I think there you get to a point where it's like you got to do some serious backtracking, but you can just go. Like
yeah,
you
and usually you're powered up. Like you have the Samus is like screw attack or the ice beam or something. You just kill the enemies instantly.
Yeah. So you can just blast through them. You got so much health. You could take a little damage here and there. You just go. Get to where you need to go. Hit a save point. Keep going. Whatever you got to do. But this, because every hit just can take so much damage, no matter how far, you could be at the beginning of the game, somebody could still hit, you got more health, they still hit like a tank. So you might be a little bit stronger offensively, but defensively, you're just as weak. So having to do that, go through all the platforming, the teleporters aren't in a good place. I got to a point where I was up in the catacombs and I was like, I had to go back. Where did I have to go back? I had to go back to the teleporter so I could get to the sacred library to do some other stuff. And I was just like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm halfway down here. I've already gotten through. I've been through the depth. The depth sucks. So whatever, I'm done. So, like, I don't want to play this anymore.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's like, it's the platform. Like I don't mind doing the platforming, but that, and like, you have to take the platforming seriously, right? You have to do it real. Cause you can't just mess up. You have to like avoid all the spikes every single time. You have to like fight the enemies. You have to like actually take the enemies seriously. You have to like parry them and do the right stuff every time. So it's kind of laborious to like go around this map that you're supposed to be backtracking. Cause it's like, here's a dedicated platforming section. Here's a dedicated combat section. It's not like a flowing map. You like have to actually like do it and like take it all seriously all the time.
Yeah. And it does get exhausting after a while. There's just no point where you feel like I'm strong enough where I could just bust through everything, take a little damage, whatever, here and there, and keep going and get to where I need to go. And I think they tried to make this more like a Dark Souls kind of Metroidvania where it's just like, yes, you do have to think about everything. And I feel like if I had more time, I would probably be more patient with that. Because I do like the combat. The combat is fun, especially when you fight the mirror version of yourself. I love those fights. Those are my favorite fights. It's so good. So the combat in and of itself, fine. But when I am in the mode of I need to get back to where I need to go, I don't feel like fighting. I don't feel like doing anything extra. I just want to get to where I want to go. Because you mentioned this too. I've already done this. I've done this 2, 3, 4, 5 times. I'm over it. Where Metroid allows you that freedom. It's like Nintendo understands you've done this a whole bunch of times. You're all powered up. Cool. It's not like the enemies get stronger as you get stronger. It's like, nah, you've been through this. Go ahead. Whoop on all of them. Blast through them. Take a little damage. Go for it. You're trying to get to this other area that you couldn't get to at the beginning of the game. So here you are. And then once you get into that area, then the enemies are strong. So that element, I'm not going to say it's a mistake. I understand the design decision as to why Ubisoft went in that direction. I just think it's not the best way to do a Metroidvania. And it took playing this game to understand what makes something like Metroid and in some ways Castlevania so good is because they allow the backtracking to become a little simpler as you need to go. It's not as laborious the entire time. It makes complete sense when you have to do it for the first time, maybe second time. But once you've gone through it and you're on to tougher sections, your weapons are better, your items are better, there is zero sense that the beginning should be tough at any point. So exhaustion is what I felt with this. I don't think it's a bad game. I don't think it's a bad game at all. I really like it. I think if I were reviewing it and I did finish it, I'd probably rate it like a 7 or an 8. Because all the elements combined are strong. It is a very compelling, fun game. I like the upgrade system. They don't just hand you stuff. That's kind of the dichotomy with this game. There is the element where it's a little too tough for a Metroidvania, but as a game itself, like a puzzle platformer, it's like the right kind of tough.
Right. And I don't feel like it needed to be a Metroid game, right? I mean, it just feels like it would have been better if it was a normal game.
I had this thought. I was like, this is a puzzle platformer in a Metroidvania. Like, that's what this is. This is a puzzle platformer. So I was like, if they settled on just make this a puzzle platformer, I think I would have had a heck of a lot more fun with it and felt far less exhaustion. But because they decided to make it a Metroidvania, it definitely more exhaustion. The other thing I really didn't like, which is part of the exhaustion, doors. The doors. In Metroid, you know what you're running into. You know, that's a missile door. I need missiles. Oh, that's an ice door. Okay, at some point I'm going to get the ice beam. There's so many doors that you don't know how to open them.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah.
Like, they try to do the whole Metroid thing where it's like, you need a specific something, but you will never know what that specific something is because they're all just doors. Maybe it's a wooden door, but it's not like you have fire arrows to open that. No, it's just like you need a double jump. And then eventually you'll be able to reach high enough to go around on the other side and open the door by pulling the lever. It's just like, so you're running into all these doors and there's no way to set a specific kind of marker on the map that tells you this was a door I couldn't go into. So then you get this new thing that, you know, gives you some power.
Yeah, you take the pictures, right? But like, yeah, it's like until you know what the actual function of the item is, it's impossible to tell what it's supposed to be for it.
Yeah, so you go back to this door that you like, yeah, I remember this door. Maybe I got this new perk I can do, and nope. Because I have no idea what this door is meant to do. Like, again, you go to Metroid, you know, you get the missiles. Oh, I remember all those missile doors. Yeah, okay, I remember where that one is. I'm gonna go there and shoot it. And then you go through it, and then you come across the ice door, and it's like, oh frick, what is this door? Okay, I don't know what that is. And then you realize, but it's clear, it's like blue, kind of frosty, yep. You know, it's like, okay, all right, well, then you get the ice beam. It's like, oh, I remember those blue. Okay. This, it's, oh, I got the ability to like fly through the air, and it's like, okay, cool. Maybe that'll help me get through one of those doors. And you get to the door. No, you, what do I need? that's the question that you have. What do I need? I thought, okay, that's not it. Then you get something else. You can't remember what the upgrade I got after that was, but you get
like
something
else. Teleporting
else.
Thing. Yeah. Right. Like you have,
yes,
to
the teleporting
teleport.
Thing. Yeah. You get to one of those doors. Nope. That's not it either. So it's like,
yeah.
You keep backtracking to places. So now you're having to backtrack on top of your backtracking. And it's like, oh my God. So you go back to an original area that you were at and you try to make some progress. Maybe, maybe not. That very frustrating.
Yeah. It's a game where I felt like I wanted to go back after I just beat the story and then try to clean up after that. Like I did all my clean up right before the last boss, essentially. Because I kept running into that where it's like, I don't know what this is for. And I think it's just easier for me to wait to get all the power-ups and then I can try to figure it out later. But I do kind of like that they did make at least the power-ups kind of weird, because I think one of the things with Metroid is that it is kind of played out, right? Like, you know what all the power-ups are going to be for the most part before we even play the game sometimes.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I know I'm going to get that morph ball.
Yeah, you're going to get the morph ball, you're going to get the missiles. Like, that was one thing with Metroid Dread. I feel like it did a lot of stuff different, which is good, but it didn't do enough different with the actual power-ups, where it's like, sure, you're still getting all the stuff that you expect to get in the Metroid, and it's a hard task for, I mean, it's Metroid, so you want that stuff, but like, if you're not Metroid, but you're just making a Metroid game, you want different stuff.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, I understand that. I just, if they made it clear as to what you need, sure, I don't know what it is, but once I discover it, then it's like, oh, then it excites me, because it's like, oh yeah, I know I can make some progress. I don't know what that progress is. It might not even be a lot of progress. It might just lead me to another gate where I need something else, but at least I get the sensation of I'm making progress. Whereas with, as it is right now, it's just, I don't know if I'm going to make progress. I can go there, but who knows? And then if I don't, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Bosses are fun. I like all the bosses. Mini bosses, big bosses, they're all fun. Again, my favorite are the mirror matches. Those are those, because I mean, they don't hold back with the AI on that one. Like,
no, they go crazy.
I'm like, oh, he can do what I do.
Yeah.
So that's fun. You don't see that a lot with like mirror matches. I feel like developers are too afraid to let the AI kind of do what you can do and like,
yeah,
make you think a little bit.
It doesn't feel good to get juggled by someone else.
No, I don't. It's like, oh freak, I'm straight up getting juggled.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then he put an ultimate on me, you know. Like, oh frick. So that was fun. I the first time I fought it, I think I died like 4 or 5 times. But you know, you're still kind of learning the parries and like the timing and things like that. That little Manticore boss, I thought that was going to be harder.
I mean, some of them, most of them are actually not too bad. The Shadow Princes are probably the toughest guys.
They are. It's a good game. I do think it's a good game. It's one of those, I felt like I got to play 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. And if I make progress, I'm probably going to play longer. But if I'm not making progress, I'm going to set it down, go play something else for a little while until I get less frustrated that the fact that I didn't make progress. The music too. The music's very good.
Yeah.
Listen to the soundtrack by itself. I was like, oh, yes. Now, I don't think it's prominent enough in the game.
Yeah, but I don't really remember a lot of it. It's like, oh, really?
Yeah, but if you listen to the soundtrack, it's like, oh, frick, this music is good. Music is really good. So Gareth Coker and Mentrix, who's actually Arabic, I believe. She's an Arabic artist.
I know some of the bosses have like a cool like, guitar riff songs, and those are kind of cool.
Listen to the soundtrack by itself. You'll appreciate how good the music actually is. It's definitely... like it right now, it's soundtrack of the year kind of music. Like it's very good. Okay. It is very good. All the other stuff is fine. I don't have much to say about the story because I didn't finish it. I wanted to just kind of watch the YouTube and finish it that way, but I didn't have time. But I really like the voice acting.
Well, I don't know if I should make the comment I am, but
you can make the. I don't get messed up by spoilers.
They didn't finish the story either, so it's fine.
There we go. I did like the voice acting. I like the characters. They're all, you know, your typical archetypes of, you know, warrior types. You have the very intelligent types. You have the super, super leader type. You have the barbaric.
I always like it when they build up a kind of like rogues gallery, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to fight this guy at some point.
Yeah, basically. I think they're all voiced very well. I like it. cookie cutter at times, but they're voiced well. They're acted well. So I buy into it. I do. I think that's it for Prince of Persia. It's good. I just really wish they did better with the Metroidvania aspect of it, which is mostly the backtracking. So everything else I do, I applaud and I like. So I hope we get more of that, but I hope they lean into the puzzle platformer style instead of a Metroidvania.
Or just make it so you can warp between all the save points. I feel like that would have curbed the backtracking so hard it would have been like almost a non-issue, but they like have the specific warp points instead.
That could work. Yeah. I would agree with that because there's enough save points where it's thankful there's enough save points. There's a lot of points where you can die. And I didn't die like a whole bunch, but...
Well, it just hurts when you do, though, right? Because it's like, oh, I got to go all the way back to wherever I was because there was no warp point.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and I did it. That was one of the things that happened to me, too. It's like I died. It's like, oh, my God. That happened to me in the depths. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay.
Dang.
You played what I talked about in the first podcast of this year, Momodora Moonlit Farewell.
Yeah, we did.
How did you feel about that?
It was pleasant. I liked it. I mean, it's kind of because I think you're very mild on it, and I'd agree. It's kind of a mild type of game. I mean, it's a Metroid game, but it's also kind of not. It's a Metroid in the style of, I think, what its biggest inspiration is, which is Cave Story. I don't know if you ever played that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. Cave Story isn't. It's got like an interconnected map, but it's not really a Metroid. There's like a two parts where you need the backtrack, but it's basically you're going through Mega Man levels almost. Where it's not the Metroid part's not that important. I think that philosophy carries over to this game too. Where you're doing an interconnected map, but it's also very simple. Like you know, I take a picture of the entire map, and it's like probably the size of one Prince of Persia map, like one area from Prince of Persia, and it's all kind of in a straight line for the most part. There's like maybe one or two branches, but it's like each area is kind of a straight line, horizontal or vertical. And so it's all pretty straightforward. And so the main thing is just, it's kind of a pleasant action game where it doesn't push you too hard or anything. I mean, some of the bosses are a little tough, but you can kind of easily curb stomp the game too, with the card system. Like there's one where you get a shield every time you heal, which basically gives you an extra hit. And it's like, okay, well, the game's just totally trivial now.
That makes me think of back when I was playing RoboCop, and you could get a circuit board for your gun that would make it not only where you didn't have to reload, but it also changed your fire to automatic. It's like, there's literally no point to use any other board because I don't have to reload. I have unlimited ammo in this gun automatically. And it doesn't have burst fire. I just hold the button as a I got that. And I was like, okay, now I'm going back. Now I'm going to do those trophies where I got to do the shooting gallery.
Yeah, so I mean, I was a little disappointed by, because it reminds me of a system in Castlevania. I think it's Circle of the Moon. It's one of the first Game Boy Advance ones where it had a card system too, but it had like two sets of cards and you could kind of mix and match them for different powers. Mm. And so you could get like a fire whip or like something that gives you a shield depending on how you did stuff. But this is not really as intricate. It's kind of just like, here's overpowered stuff that you can toss on your person and then it's just whatever. And So it's got these subsystems. So it has like the pet system too. And like, I spent most of the game not even understanding what they did.
I only used the attack one where I forget what it does, but it sends like shockwaves out or something. I don't remember.
Yeah. So like that stuff's kind of superfluous. And I mean,
those are great for stun though.
Yeah.
They stun pretty much anything.
And you can unlock the character from the fourth game, where just a tiny version that follows you. And I thought that's kind of cute, so I just have her follow me the whole time. But
that was my first one, so I didn't get any of the references, if there were any.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of the fourth game is like the one people have probably played. The rest are like freeware games, essentially, that the guy made. I mean, this whole series is kind of like a Cave Story fan series, because the other ones were very explicitly like Cave Story, like the same type of graphic style and all that. So. I mean, it's kind of cool because it's like, this is, I mean, it's essentially some Brazilian weeb guy. I follow him on Twitter. He talks about anime and visual novels all the time. So it's kind of fun. It's like, I mean, this is a passion project for him. That's kind of fun that way. It's his query stuff he likes. And I think the art style and stuff, I mean, I think it looks cool. I think the enemies look cool. But it's one of those games where it's very straightforward. And I, you know, I agree with your assessment. I mean, there's just not a whole lot to say about it other than it's a pleasant time.
So. Yeah. I think I got some of the Metroid elements in there because there are some points where you're gated.
Right. No, it has Metroid stuff in it. It's just so simple where it's like, oh, it's not even really a factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And it always tend to go vertical. Like everything was always vertical. You were always gated vertically, not horizontally, just vertically. So that was always weird to me. But
all the secrets and stuff, I mean, you can basically always tell where the secret's going to be because it's just like this one branch that's like you go down or you go up and that's the branch and you just go back to where you were. It's like always a dead end. It's like it's not like a real branching map. It's like here's the power up path and then here's the real path.
It all comes together in a interesting way. I didn't think it was poorly designed.
No, but yes, it's perfectly fine. It's just not that complicated. Not really. I mean, this is one of those things too, where I felt like the fourth game was a lot stronger in a lot of respects, just because it felt like it had a better tone or atmosphere. Like it felt like it was like an actual hostile place where like, it's not like Dark Souls, but it's kind of like that vein where it's like, this is a threatening place. We don't really understand anything that's going on. And this game, I think, is very in your face. We're like, here's the story. Here's everything that's going on. These maps are super straightforward and simple, and this is what you're supposed to do. And it's like, there's no like tone or atmosphere to it. And I know why they did that is because this is like a direct sequel and the other one was like its own standalone thing.
Yeah.
Where these are the characters that are in this game are the characters you play as in all the other Momodora games that aren't the last one. So
yeah,
he has like a need to feel like, well, these are actually established characters. So it should be more like, there should be more of a narrative. This should be more straightforward, but I don't know. It's not that as interesting. So that was kind of how I felt.
The whole threatening world part too. I thought there were moments where they were threatening enemies.
Yeah.
But you're right. I didn't feel like the world was threatening. And I think part of that is there's not a lot of enemies to fight when you'll have moments where you're kind of locked off and then you have to fight a wave of enemies, but you're not, as you're traveling through the world, there's like one, two, maybe you know, traditional 2D platformer style where it's like you'll fight one and then the next and then the next.
They have it set up where it's kind of just like an annoying obstacle course where here's a guy who shoots stuff. Yes. You gotta like approach him carefully, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels more platformer in that way, although I think it should feel more like a threatening world. Like I think about, again, Metroid Prime, where you enter the ruins for the first time and, you know, it's bright, it's sunny, but you're still like, what? Where are we going?
Well, those like beetle things come out of the ground. It's like, ah.
Yeah, the beetle things coming out, the bees from the nests come out. It's just like, what the frick is happening?
Yeah.
That doesn't really happen in Momodora. And maybe, I don't know if that was the intent. If it was, then it doesn't meet that mark at all. But I think part of it is there's just not a lot of enemies to fight, you know, at one time. I don't know. I guess it's kind of weird because Super Metroid kind of does the threatening world thing as well, and that's 2D. Castlevania does it too. I mean, it's freaking castles. It's stuff falling out of candlesticks. Like, what the frick? So, I guess I would have to look deeper into why it doesn't feel like a threatening world, because I guess it's not that it's not enough enemies. But maybe it's the way that they're placed or what they do.
General, the aesthetic of it, I mean, it's a bit more, compared to the fourth game, it's a bit more brighter and cheery and like warmer colors, whereas it feels a bit more inviting. I mean, there's like a cave part you go into where it's pitch black and that one's a bit scarier, I guess. But I mean, at that point, it's pretty late in the game. It's like, I don't know. I just feel like in general, it's a lot more inviting, which is kind of weird coming from the fourth game, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think you're right. That dark area was the first time where I was like, oh, frick, like, let me tread carefully.
Yeah.
Okay. Momodora, Moonlit Forest. It's not a bad game.
It's good.
It's fine. Yeah, it's good. Okay. Let's talk AAA because, you know.
Oh, man.
Everybody's favorite topic right now is AAA. Warner Brothers will be doubling down on live service games and mobile games. That's the story. That's all we need to know, really. Like, David, you said you had a lot to say before we started this podcast, so you haven't said much. So go ahead and talk. Say something.
Well,
please.
I'm trying to find the specific spot of some of the things that they said, but like, I'm very confused, and it just reminds me of how bad Warner Brothers is run when I see something like that. Because you look at the last year that they have had, and I'm talking like from like March here to March there. You had the highest selling video game of the year in Hogwarts Legacy. Single player game made more money than any other game. It even beat Breath of the Wild, which is pretty incredible. Then you release Suicide Squad, which even they admit is a bomb and is underperformed.
Who would have thought?
And your takeaway from looking at these things is, man, we really need to double down on that whole thing we did with Suicide Squad. Like, how do you come to this? You've watched as so many people have made this discovery of crap. We can't keep putting money into lives. Ubisoft had to just be like, no, we can't do this. Like, had to cut their losses and cancel so many projects. We've heard of a bunch of other teams that have canceled their projects. Sony right now is going through a bunch of cancellations because they see the cost that live service has to get into, and it wouldn't be worth getting into it. Even if it could make a good profit, it's like, we have to put money behind this for longer than we're willing to put money behind this. So all of this information is out here, and you still want to double down on this.
So here's a quote from them that I think is fascinating. And this I'm reading from VGC. The quote says, the challenge we've had, JB Parrott, the company's CEO. Okay. So the challenge we've had is that our business historically has been very AAA console based. And so, as you know, that's a great business. When you have a hit like Harry Potter, it makes the year look amazing. And then when you don't have a release, or unfortunately, we also have disappointments, we just released Suicide Squad this quarter, which was not strong. It just makes it very volatile when you don't have a release like Harry Potter. And duh?
Like, yeah, that's every single like video game company.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right. You understand when you have a release like Harry Potter, that's when your business does better, especially when you are historically mostly console based. So for them wanting to get into mobile to subsidize what console may not be doing, from a business standpoint, I understand the logic. But to your point, David, why would you not make more Harry Potters that are not live service? Why would you not make games that are similar to what Harry Potter has done, or maybe Batman Arkham, and do those instead of doubling down on the thing that clearly didn't work for you for a variety of reasons? Maybe not all WB's fault necessarily.
Well, it was a terrible IP to choose to base everything.
Yes, that's the problem. I mean, Suicide Squad gives them like an out. to make the wrong decisions because they can blame that on Suicide Squad, not it being live service.
Because I can admit you turn, like, for instance, you turn Harry Potter, that game, into a live service game is probably doing pretty well for itself. Just probably. Being honest.
Yeah, sure.
But Gotham Knights wouldn't have done that.
No.
That's another one. And that game was pretty much, you'd imagine that was probably a live service game originally. Like honestly, it feels like it was probably a live service game originally.
I imagine, yeah.
How crazy is it? Like, how incompetent do they have to be to, like, not have any real Batman game for over a decade?
Oh, it's incredibly incompetent. I think I've even said it on the podcast, they would probably be on their development, in the development cycle, almost at the end of the development cycle for a second Batman game at this point. Yeah, or whatever the second game is. We would have already had a Batman game by now.
I don't understand the thinking of, here's Batman Sidekicks game, here's the Suicide Squad game, but no, like, actual Batman game. It's like how Sony keeps doing these Spider-Man movies about Spider-Man in them. It's like, it makes no sense.
At least there's a legal reason there. Like, there's something that they're tiptoeing, whereas here it's just straight up, we chose not to do it.
I never want to knock a developer for doing something outside of what they normally do, but...
Well, Rocksteady doesn't have to make them, but literally no one's working on a Batman game at all for a decade. It's crazy.
Yeah,
especially when there were four extremely successful ones. Like, as much as people don't like Origins, still did very well.
Origins did great too. I mean,
If you're WB and you're Rocksteady, and Rocksteady goes to WB and is like, look, we want to make a game based on Suicide Squad, which probably at the time they pitched it, Suicide Squad was probably a little more popular, at least the idea of it. And then somewhere down the line, live services start blowing up. And I imagine WB goes, hey guys, see how much money those games are making? Catch my drift? Yeah. Okay. See you in 6 years. So, like, by that time,
I don't think they want it to be 6 years.
That was being facetious. But, you know, like, they know, like, at this point, Rocksteady, who has not done live services, is probably put into a position where they wanted to make a certain kind of game, and then they had to flip it into a live service game. And what's the easiest way to flip something into a live service? It's copy Destiny. Yeah, that should work. Let's make a loot-based game that's live service. Yeah, sure. And then it takes 10 years, and then it's not the thing that they originally... I imagine this is what happened. It's not the thing that they originally wanted to do. And so they got to take the fall for this. Meanwhile, who else is going to make Batman? All right, because WB's looking at Rocksteady like, all right, you guys wanted to do Suicide Squad. We let you do Suicide Squad. You effed up Suicide Squad because, right, they're going to blame it on Rocksteady. So now they're probably going to go, you're going to do Batman from now on. Like, that's what you're going to do. And
most of them aren't even there anymore. It's like the Redfall situation.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't matter to WB.
But the studio's gone. Yeah.
This is what you're going to do. So...
I don't understand why WB Montreal wasn't working on one. Like, I get they made a different kind of game, but, like, man, they really could have done something a little bit different. Gotham Knights was good, but, like, again, Batman, you have one of the most popular IP out there.
I 100% agree. I'm just thinking from WB's perspective, the best Batman games were Rocksteady's. So,
yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, not very mismanaged. That I don't understand how. Again, it's not even them specifically. Like, look at the entire industry right now. We've talked about it is a breakout genre. It is not a break-in genre. You cannot break into the live service area. You have to break out in it, and you're gonna waste a lot of money trying to figure that out.
So here,
and they can't.
Here's another interesting quote. We think the opportunity for us, which again, this a multi-year opportunity, because games is certainly a bit of a long cycle business too, but the opportunity to take those four franchises and be able to develop a much more holistic approach, particularly around expanding into the mobile and multi-platform free-to-play space, which could give us a much better and consistent set of revenue. And you'll see us launching later this year some mobile free-to-play games, which we hope will start building that. So
I wonder, on mobile.
Sure. But I also wonder, with this live service approach, I wonder if they're thinking these four franchises that we have, our audience likes these four franchises. So we can make live service games within these four franchises, and we'll be able to make a consistent set of revenue with these four franchises because our audience likes these franchises and they cannot get these franchises anywhere else. So they're thinking perhaps it's guaranteed money because you can't play Harry Potter anywhere else. You can't play Batman really anywhere else. So it almost, there is a little logic to this. The problem I would think is, I mean, live services are too freaking hard. It's high risk, high reward. But that's the problem. It's super high risk.
Yeah, the risk is very much outweighs the high reward because of how hard it is to find. Again, you're not just competing with the other game. Like, there's a difference in competing for the other games. You're competing for the attention. Like, you're not just competing with dollars. You're competing for attention because
for sure,
not everybody, like, I've talked about it before. Call of Duty's my main game. That gives me very little time. They're full-on shooters that I would like to try, and I don't. Why? I don't have the time to pull away from Call of Duty because I'm doing that thing. There are a lot of black hole games that are already holding on to people, and if it's really hard to infiltrate and create your own.
I agree. Let me play devil's advocate for a moment, though. How many Harry Potter fans do you think are playing something like Call of Duty or Apex Legends, maybe Fortnite, things like that, right? How many Batman fans are playing those games
Fortnite.
As well?
I can see Fortnite.
I agree. Fortnite, I feel like, has touches all audiences. Yeah. But I think people generally could fit in like two live service games in like their time, like if they want
to. And again, I can see Harry Potter. Like, that makes complete sense to me. Like, sure, that would work. We see something like Hogwarts Legacy be such a big seller. You can look at it and immediately think, okay, if you had something that you could make that would keep people involved playing it, yeah, that'll work. I'm unsure on Game of Thrones, mainly because Game of Thrones is competing with things like the Dragon's Dogmas and stuff like that. And I think you'd have to create it would be a really hard game to craft. It is just my opinion on
it's
that.
Like
one.
Lord
I don't,
of the
I don't
Rings.
Think I don't yeah. think there's a good way to make a game like that that people want to just stick with. Like, you're almost having to jump into MMO territory, and I'm just not sure that you can make that work. I'm very interested to see how Dune makes it work, since that's another WB property that with Dune Awakening. But then you go, obviously, DC, like, you can try to do something, but you already abandoned that Justice League game that was out for the longest time, DC Online or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And that didn't do necessarily much for them. So, like, and we've already watched Marvel's Avengers, what it tried to do. I just don't know that works. So we're already all the way down to what was the other property that they were talking about in here? Mortal Kombat, which
it already is one.
So it's fine. It's in the lane that it's in. Like, it's a little different, obviously, of a live service, but it's in its own lane that kind of exists. Like, so really the only thing that we've gotten out of this is Harry Potter would probably work if you do it right. Like, I don't see where these other franchises, like, that I get why, and they talk about strategic investment, but again, the time that you empty into that is time you don't get back.
You know, did you want to say something, Jack?
Sure. I mean, I guess just the impression I get from what I, the impression I get from what they're saying is it's almost like the Harry Potter game doing well was like a fluke for them. Like they weren't expecting it. Cause I mean, everything they've
everybody knew that was going to be so good. They've got stupid people up in those offices. Like, I don't know that anybody expected like best-selling game, but we knew it was going to do gangbusters.
Right. Well, and they're talking though, like, oh, this is like somehow not good for us and we need to like pivot all the way to this other direction. It's like, I just don't, I mean, this whole company just seems horribly mismanaged to me. Like, I feel it's Mortal Kombat. Yeah. Mortal Kombat's doing okay, but it's like, I think they're mismanaging that right now too. It's just like everything they're doing is not good. I think they're going to reassess their strategy in a year or two at least. So
it's just like how people said, oh, make Pokemon an MMO and everyone's going to flock to it. Look at what happened with Pal World. Like, it's not the exact same thing, but it's pretty close. So it's like things we know. Harry Potter's going to sell like crazy because its fans are invested. And same with something like Pokemon MMO and Spider-Man. Like, people love that game. So it's just...
Yeah, it seems like what they want to do is just create consistent income. And you can't do that with a one and done. So I get the logic. Like, I really don't...
Oh, it makes sense. In the sense of like the most basic business sense,
right?
But you have to have a product. That's the problem here. Is you're making an argument based on a product you've not proven you can make.
Right.
This is the same way we treat Xbox when they talk about it's the okay. I got to see if you can do this before I can trust you. Whereas with PlayStation and Nintendo, we've said it's like okay, you've done this before. I don't have to worry so much on can you do this because you've shown me you could do this before. Like, there's nothing in me that makes me think WB can successfully put out a live service product and it actually function correctly beyond the fluke that was the very beginning of multiverses, because even that dropped out after they realized, crap, no one's buying anything in this game.
I feel like what WB is run by a bunch of hedge fund managers right now.
Pretty much. They're trying to make it look great so it can sell. That's what they're trying
to do.
That's
what it feels like.
I think they actually officially within like a month or so can go back on the market for merger or whatnot after the whole Discovery thing. So I think that's probably what they're trying to do is let's cut everything we can, tax break and whatnot, and let's announce everything in a way that it sounds like it'll make a lot of money, like that we know what we're doing.
I think a Batman live service could work, though. Hear me out.
Could.
Hear me out. You know what Destiny has done in the last 10 years? Like, they've built up this huge story, all this other stuff. Why can't Batman do something like that?
Where... You mean like Arkham Origins or multiplayer?
No,
you mean to eventually get to a place where everyone hates it and like
yes, they don't want Batman anymore, and they vault half the first game.
Yep. No longer can you take down the Joker.
I guess maybe Batman. I don't know. Kind of like kind of in an MMO kind of way where it's like it's just this ongoing series. Like
yeah.
Because that's what Batman has always been. Like, it's always just been Batman against the world. So, I feel like if you could do that in an interesting way, although figuring out how to do that in an interesting way is the hard part, but I feel like...
They're just going to make Destiny. That's what they're going to do.
Loot.
Gonna get the bat loot. Stuff.
Oh, gosh. Batarangs of different rarities.
What is that? Yeah. what are the names of the factions? I can't remember.
Yeah,
like it's that copied. Like
yeah,
I can't remember like the enemy factions.
Oh,
like
Destiny?
I remember, yeah. What are the Vex doing in here?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is Batman fighting the Cabal?
Yeah.
They're the Penguins.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the Riddlers and the Jokers.
It's penguins from a different dimension.
The worry is that it obviously ends up falling into like just the boring, like beat up this faction on the street, you know, every day. Like, again, like you said, make it well. It's just, it's hard.
I mean, that's real Gotham, right? Like, if we were to make it real, like, there you go. You just got to beat up on the.
They just don't have any creativity whatsoever. I mean, that Suicide Squad thing where everyone's just going around shooting guns. It's like, really? That's what you're doing for Suicide Squad? I feel like
their hands were kind of tied with time and stuff.
Somebody said it just a second ago, loot. Like, That is an actual like problem in these
battering
games.
Rarities, yeah.
Because like as much as like you make different batterings, it's like it's tough to like actually make the it's tough to make that viable though in
do
a
you remember,
live
like,
environment.
Did you play Avengers?
You make all these different kinds of guns though. Like it's a lot easier to make these different shooting weapons compared to like different batarangs in that sense, like that they actually do something different.
It just sounds
did
so
you
silly.
Play Avengers where they had like the Hulk and it's like you got like different like Hulk like his skeletons, you couldn't even like see it, like if you get like different rarity of his skeletons
again, this is why I'm like it doesn't work, because it's straight up just it's purely stat, whereas in a shooter the weapon actually changes how you're playing.
You could do a like, different batarang that does different things. Yeah.
You can, but it just feels a lot it's more Batman. Limited compared to a gun. Like there's a lot
get,
more than it
one,
like,
one you can be the back credit much, card and he yeah. gets frozen in advice.
You forget how many gadgets Batman
okay,
has. You just
okay, they're Gambit.
You can make his Batmobile a different rarity. You know?
Again, I'm sure somebody could figure out a really neat way of doing something like that. It just like Gotham Knights was about the closest you could get to that. And it did not feel like there was not a way to make combat feel any way different. Like it really felt like it was
the
straight
box,
numbers.
David.
It was numbers and
bring
and,
Lucius
and
Fox.
Costumes.
Okay. And
you
then
give
he
him
can
guns.
Do...
Yep. Batman kills people.
Yeah. Yeah, you're
bringing Zack
Snyder,
the
rarities.
Snyder cut, yeah. The Snyder cut, but Rocksteady Batman. It is really funny that like Batman doesn't kill people. Fam, we had a tank in Arkham Knight. There's
know,
no
right?
way that thing shot rubber bullets.
Concussion blasts, David.
Bro, if those are rubber bullets shooting, it was like they were tearing holes into those people. Like,
ain't
no way those were stopping hearts. But it's just like, I think that's probably part of it, because a lot of live service, I'm not saying that it's everything, but a lot of live services shooters, like a lot of the successful ones are like that aren't MMOs.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's been smaller ones that have been successful.
It's the way the loots have been able to work.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is part of the homogeny of people look at what's successful and so they try to copy that. But if you legit tried to do something interesting with, say, a Batman, for example, and you came out with a good idea that is actually like workable and fun and interesting, I think it could work. I think uniqueness is undervalued in AAA games.
That's why
even with business models. So
that's why I'm so sad, because in the Spider-Man in the Insomniac leaks, there was actually a live service Spider-Man game that was being worked on called The Great Web, and it was lit.
Did you
seemed
see
like
that slide
kind of thing?
Where it's like,
oh, I am so
Spider-Man
upset,
meets GTA Online.
Yeah, I'm actually very upset, because the premise and the way that they were designing it sounded amazing, because you would actually pick an archetype of a Spider-Man. Like, so they would do, that was kind of how you did things,
like,
but they were
the multiverse.
That you would have like, there were like raids, whatever. There were like actual like events, like they were actually planning up like a whole entire symbiote saga.
Sure.
Like
yeah.
is how it was going to work and stuff. And it's like, oh my gosh, this would have been so cool. Like to go on these, like together with other Spider-Man and raid and stuff like that. Like that's how you could make a good Batman game. Is essentially you'd have to have it where it would be that kind of an idea. But taking the whole multiverse idea and using your Spider-Man, that gives you your variety that you need. Because then it falls into the like World of Warcraft kind of style, instead of it being about the, it's still, you're still wanting to get better loot, but you'll deal with the, instead of having to, oh, I'm trying to get the meta weapons, you switch to different characters, you're doing different characters.
Yeah.
Different builds. Mm-hmm. And that's where you'd have to go with any, I guess that's how, honestly, where you'd have to go with any sort of Batman live service, is it would be, okay, I'm, Batman's really good, but hey, there's this Robin build that works really well. Like, you'd have to go full Bat family, that kind of stuff, probably.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, yeah. Yep. It couldn't be all Batmans. That'd be weird.
Yeah. I'm Batman. No, I'm Batman. It would turn to the beginning of Dark Knight, where like he comes from the garage and there's the Batman with guns. What gives you the right? I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I was like, are you going to do the grumble voice or not?
If there's a Batman live service game, I'm going to go in everyone's, I'm going to jump into everybody's world. I'm not wearing hockey pads. Do that to everybody. Every time I go into somebody else's game.
Oh, yeah. If they got the different voices, they could have like the different Batman voices you could choose. I choose that voice.
I'm saying I was going to do that in the chat, dude.
Oh, I know. You could do that in the chat. People. You'd be able to buy that line. There you go. You can just say it. Yeah. I'm not wearing hockey pants.
I guess when I think of the movie, though, I haven't seen it in like a decade, but it's like, it'd probably be like, I'm not wearing hockey pants. Because he can't really understand what he's saying in his Batman voice. Right.
That movie is still a top, like, probably top five, top ten. In my opinion, the original, the Dark Knight, like it's just premier film.
In general,
not just as a superhero film, it is just a phenomenal film.
Yeah, I liked all of them. They were good. All right, that'll do it for us tonight, today.
All right,
whatever time zone you're watching this, whatever time of day. Appreciate you watching. Appreciate you listening. Talk to you later. Deuces.
Peace.
Yeah.